So, hi, I'm Neil. I'm just going to introduce Denise and explain a little bit about what we're doing today. So it's all about the Cyber Resilience Act. This is some EU legislation. It came into force at the end of 2024. But when it really sort of the mandates come in at the towards the end of 2027. The whole idea is to try and create some regulation about the sort of minimum bar that someone who produces software or hardware needs to hit from a security point of view. Right now, you don't really need to worry about this kind of stuff, and that sets up some really, really unfortunate incentives. And the real spotlight here is on things like Internet of Things. And so, you know, on that sense, this is legislation that's probably good news, but it has some implications, particularly for open source. It's a little bit unclear what the requirements are going to be for open source project maintainers. CRA says, look, if it's not for commercial use, you're okay. You're outside of CRA. It's no problem. But what does commercial use really mean? If you have a project that's got a very permissive license and someone else takes it on from you and they commercialize it, who's actually accountable here? Who's responsible for making sure that you hit your CRA obligations? This is really important for us at Element because, of course, we have projects like this. And so we're spending a bunch of time thinking in this area right now. And in particular, our speaker, Denise, is our expert on this topic. So Denise is just really going to talk to us about what the CRA is, how it applies to open source generally, and then how we're thinking about this at Element. So round of applause for Denise, please, and then we'll get right into it.
Thanks. Neil. Thank you, everyone, for joining. I'm really sorry I can't be with you in person this year, especially for making time for joining right at the end of the conference. I hope this will somehow be enjoyable. I know it's can be a very intense topic, but I think as open source communities, it's really important that we start having these conversations really early to really understand the impact it can have on us. So like Neil said, today I'll just be talking through the CRA a little bit. I won't spend too much time on that. There's a lot of knowledge out there being put out by the Eclipse Foundation, the Linux Foundation. There's a lot of really good work being done. So I'll just share a little bit about what we know so far. But today I really want to talk you through the sort of journey we're going through at Element to really prepare and make sure that we understand all of the different implications for Matrix in general and for for-profit organizations specifically. Like Neil said, I work at Element. I'm the head of policy and compliance, so I tend to look after our regulatory compliance. So this is something that I've been monitoring for a while. Full disclaimer, I am not a lawyer, so please don't take anything from today's talk as advice or recommendations. It's really just around sharing knowledge, and I'll be really looking forward to hear some feedback or any things you might be doing differently in your organization. So going really into the basics, what is the Cyber Resilience Act? So it's an EU regulation. If you know much about how the EU legal landscape works, a regulation is something that has to be implemented by every single member state, how it's written. Directives usually have to be implemented into national law, so they're a bit lighter touch. So a regulation is really kind of the strongest piece of law that we can get coming out of the EU because it has to be uniform across all member states. It came out to enhance the security of digital products. Like Neil said before, it was born out of Internet of Things products and specifically looking at hardware with digital elements, but it is all encompassing and it covers anything that is a product with digital elements. That's the actual language. How we're going to do this? The idea is to set uniform standards across the EU for cybersecurity requirements. So this would apply to every product with digital elements within the EU. So that would be something that is purely software, like the sort of things we're talking about here. But then it could also be things like your smart fridges and into the automotive industry as well. So it will be very all-encompassing. Specifically, it has been in place. So it was the final version of this regulation was agreed in December last year. So right now we're going through what is called a grace period, where we have the time to fully understand it and put everything we need to put in place to comply. What is also happening on the Commission side of things is that they have to spend these next 2 years developing detailed guidance on how to implement this. So right now there is some draft guidance specifically for open source, and this is being negotiated at the moment at the Commission level, and there's a lot of advocates involved in this and providing feedback as well from the FOSS communities. So this is what we'll be spending the next year and a half doing, is really discussing the guideline, discussing how this really vague piece of text has to be implemented on a practical level. Like I said before, it applies to all products with digital elements, which now have to start being designed and developed in accordance with the CRA. So this is something that's really important, and it's a bit different than what we're used to seeing these laws coming out, is that the scope is defined at a product level, not an organizational level. So if you cast your mind back to the GDPR, for example, which was also a European, every country has to implement it level regulation. This was very much applied at an organizational level. So as an organization, you can be a controller, you can be a processor. These are the things you need to do at an organizational level. There's some details there, but it can be quite vast, and it can apply to many situations. When you look at the CRA specifically, because it's at a product level, this means that a single company will have different roles depending on where we're looking at their supply chain. So that means that Element, for example, there'll be cases where we'll be a manufacturer, a distributor, open source steward, and even importers in some cases, depending on the product. So this is also something that's really important, is that everything, like Neil was saying, everything about the CRA is around commercialization. So how we figure out the definition of the product and the scope is about who first placed a product on the market. So this is really important when you look at the open source ecosystem in general, because obviously that's the whole point of open source, is that you can share your work and forks exist and that sort of thing. So how we define these responsibilities is really about who was the first to place on the market. So if you have your own project, for example, you've made your code public, but you've not really monetized this. If someone else forks this and they do start monetizing their fork, that doesn't mean you'll suddenly inherit the manufacturer responsibilities, even though your product will end up being used in a commercial sense. So it's really about the intention, about how you want your product to be used, and if you're placing it on the market or not. So in terms of applicability, like I was saying, it happens at a product level. This is because you could have an organization developing all sorts of different products and most of them wouldn't have digital elements. So this really should give a bit more flexibility for companies to figure out where they need to put in their efforts. But also the idea here is that you can't really bring risk levels that are based on a company size, because you could have a tiny company developing a very small product, but actually this product could connect to millions of devices and bring a lot of risk. So size is really not a good determinant for risk levels. And this is why the connection to a network or device is the key. Anything that is remote data processing is instantly in scope as well, and all sorts of components for that. And then there's different levels of obligations within the supply chain, with the manufacturers being the highest level of requirements. What is out of scope? So anything that is cloud that is regulated under other regulations like the NIS2, so this really applies to more infrastructure level cloud. Software that is developed exclusively for classified and military information, and technically non-commercial open source software is out of scope. But this really raises some immediate questions. So how can we define where, what is non-commercial when we use permissive license that do allow for commercial and non-commercial use? So how do we protect ourselves really in this sense? And whose responsibility is it to figure this all out? So if you just have a hobby project that you're developing by yourself, is this something that you need to go and figure it out? And what if you're a company like Element that actually develops open source and proprietary software, which could be commercial or non-commercial? So how does it work here? So it can get really complex really quickly. And this is why it's really important to take a very methodological approach to this, and really get into the detail of your product, of your projects, and really understand what you need to do. So you've probably heard a lot about open source software stewards. This really will tend to apply more to foundations. So the idea is that a steward is a legal person. This is really, really important because I've seen some questions from around the ecosystem, and I've seen people really concerned that suddenly they're going to have a lot of responsibilities for something that is just meant to be a bit of fun for them. So this is the legal person really is really important. So a legal person is something that is legally registered, so usually a company or a foundation. A natural person is an individual, so a natural person cannot be an open source steward. And this is really on purpose to safeguard those projects where someone is just doing something on an individual level, or even if not individually, but if they're just doing something that is not for profit, is just a bit of fun. And that is usually tends to be out of scope. And then we have the open source stewards, which tend to have more resources than just an individual. And that's why this role here is a bit more defined. The idea of the stewards is that they could be providing products meant for commercial activities, even if they don't want to get profit from it. It just means that there's some exchange of money happening, or it's just software that could be used for commercial activities, and there's not even an exchange of money. So when we look at Element, for example, and you look at ESS Community, this is a project that we are the open source stewards for. So we have responsibilities around this project, and we will be producing some things that we have to for this one, but not as many responsibilities as for the things where we are manufacturers, like our pro products. So a manufacturer in this case is a natural or legal person who manufactures projects with digital elements and then markets them under their name or trademark. And then importers is usually people that are bringing products from outside the EU and distributing them within the EU. So those would be the people that would have the responsibilities, and they're the ones that could issue a mark, and then distributors as well. So the difference between distributors and importers is that the distributor tends to just distribute the product as is without affecting the product properties, and importers usually are more feature integrators that are turning bits of code into a larger project. So in terms of what you'll have to do in terms of main requirements and obligations, you'll need to have cybersecurity measures in place. If you already have some sort of framework or standard in place, like we have Cyber Essentials, ISO 27001, this is already a long way there, and it will get you in a really good position. One thing we'll have to start doing is conformity assessments and start distributing those. So how we assess our products from a security point of view, as well as provide more information to you and users. And there's a big focus on education from the CRA, and we'll have to improve our approach to reporting and documentation. So there's a really big focus on education and on centralized reporting to the European agencies for this. So manufacturers have the responsibility for putting on a CE mark that says that the product is compliant with the CRA, but also for putting all of the requirements in place, demonstrating this compliance. But also the manufacturers, especially the ones that are the first ones to put on the market, have the responsibility of reporting incidents and for collecting incidents as well. So if we look importers and distributors, they have to verify that their products comply with the CRA. So this is just changing really how you look at your supply chain and where you're going to have to bring in new processes for each role. So if you look at Element specifically by different role, there's a couple of products that we consider ourselves to be manufacturer because these have been monetized in the past. So we here should have been Synapse Pro and then ESS Pro. So these are part of our offering that have some open source code in it, but also some proprietary features. This is something that has been first placed on the market by Element. So it's something that we're and it's been commercialized by Element first. So we will be the manufacturers for these products. We'll take full responsibility for them from a CRA compliance point of view. But then when you look at the various Matrix clients, when you look at ESS community, which we make available for everyone. In this case, we will be stewards. We will still obviously have a lot of security in place, but we just won't provide things like a CE mark or software bills of materials for these products. Because we are the original manufacturers for ESS Pro, we will start making available some of our internal thinking and how we're preparing for the CRA from these two roles perspectives. We think this could be helpful to the wider community, and it's something that we're really keen on sharing, because we think that as creators of Matrix and developing Element products, we have this really unique position where we have very deep knowledge of the security of the protocol and obviously how everything works from a Matrix perspective, but we can also have this single source of reporting and disclosure of the security communications, and being able to look at it from these two angles, I think will be really helpful for us as we prepare. We are, of course, still looking at potential challenges. This is the danger with any sort of new regulation, is that you're always kind of guessing your way through it. Everyone is just making their best effort to understand what the potential risks are. Is their interpretation correct or not? So we're still learning, still revising, so and still working through it. And one thing that we're really keeping an eye on is what others in the area are looking at and what's coming out of the European Commission. So one thing we're working at the moment is looking at the guidance for free and open source software, as there's a few things that the Commission, for example, had interpreted differently than a lot of us that are actually doing the work. So it'll be really interesting to see how things evolve over the next year and a half. So this is obviously going to be quite disruptive. It is obviously something that we really worry about. We really take privacy and take security really seriously. It's part of what we do. But it is something that takes resources, takes time, and takes effort. So it's something that has to be part of your wider business strategy, and something that we need to start considering quite early on. As most of you know, open source funding can be really tricky and can be much harder at times than in other sectors. And then you add this additional layer of complexity and costs, and it can really make things a bit trickier. We are trying to take a very strategic approach to this and really look at the CRA as a regulation, but also as something that could really bring us a lot of opportunities as an industry and as a sector. So we're trying to really look at the bigger picture instead of just starting to get overwhelmed by the amount of paperwork that awaits us in all of this. So this is what we're currently doing and what we're looking at it. The first thing we're doing is actually looking at every single one of our products and look at what was our role against each one of these products that will really help us to scope out the amount of work and what we'll need to put out. And we're also working on a gap analysis, so looking at our internal procedures and policies against the CRA requirements to really understand where we need to improve. And from that, basically, our plan of work is going to come out. So this is very much something that needs to be looked at from a wider company perspective. There's a lot of implications for your security teams or engineering, but it's also something that your legal teams should be involved on and your marketing and comms teams as well. And also reviewing your staffing and resource levels. I was recently reading a report produced on the CRA by the Linux Foundation. I'm sorry if this is not the exact correct number, but they were reporting that about 60% of businesses had already confirmed they would have to review their product pricing because of the CRA and because of all of the extra work they would have to do. So this is something that is really important to look at really early on and understand the impacts it will have on your organization, because then that will also help us as a wider community to be able to push back to the commission and say, well, actually, we really want a Europe that uses European software. We have digital sovereignty, but we really need to be able to fund that as well. But we need data and information for that. So it's really important to make sure you're noting down all of these things and keeping these records, doing your projects. And this section of the presentation is really more where we kind of look at our crystal ball and try to understand what will happen after all of this is in place. We do feel like there are some risks for open source. Not everything is perfect, and we'll look at opportunities in a bit, but there are some risks coming from the CRA as well. So whilst we do hope that it delivers on these aims of security and better coordination, we would like to see some things clarified. So the main concern really is funding, and how can we ensure that open source projects are sufficiently funded and have all of the information they need to implement all of these requirements. There's been a lot of discussions around the creation of a European sovereign fund, and a lot of different proposals have been going around on how we can address this. But it is still a very large risk that we need to consider. Also, what sort of mechanisms are going to be put in place in terms of enforcement? So how can we make sure that the manufacturers are not being overloaded with this burden, but that the distributors and importers are also meeting their obligations, that they're reporting issues upstream, that they're verifying what they need to verify in their supply chain? How are you going to make sure that this is a fair system across all different roles? And especially what will be done to support open source manufacturers that take on the role of stewards. So this is where it's really important to shout out that there's a lot of people doing very good work on this. There's currently a working group that's been put together by the Eclipse Foundation that has a lot of information on this, and there's a lot of thinking. But it is still really important for us to see this information coming out from the policymaker side of things and have this reassurance that we're being considered and that we're not going to be put in a position where, again, we're taking a lot of burden of development of a lot of research and then not have that compensated back by a lot of the companies that are using the product. Which is really what leads us to the last point, which is, could the CRA unintentionally steer organizations towards proprietary software as they will make it easier to do their supply chain management? How can we make sure that companies are still focusing on open source and still seeing the benefits of open source, even if it does make the supply chain management side of things slightly more complex? But there are opportunities as well. We can really show how the values of open source align with the aims of this regulation. Transparency and communication are really important for open source development and for the implementation of the CRA. And it really creates an opportunity for us to have a better understanding of our supply chains, of our dependencies, our roles within the open source ecosystem as well. So are we contributing back as well to the products that we are importing into our own organizations? So that's really important to use this as a moment to take stock and see if we're being good players within the system and doing everything that we should be doing to support each other. And of course, increased focus on security and secure development. I jumped the gun on that one. It is also an opportunity for all of us to look at our own approach to open source and see how we might be supporting secure development within open source. So in terms of next steps, from us, what are we doing and what would we recommend to the wider community? We need to remember that legislation is vague and this is by design, especially when we're looking at something that is so vast in scope. Everything is a product with digital elements, if you think about it nowadays. So it has to be really ambiguous and vague language at times. We will have more clarity as the guidance comes out, which is being worked on. So it's really important to find a source of information that you trust and keep looking at it on this. And just remember that the CRA has a very explicit aim of supporting a rebalancing of the market, but we need to be prepared for this to happen. So we need to educate ourselves as a community and really do our best to be prepared to meet the challenges of the regulations, but also push back when it's not meeting this aim. So it's really crucial that we engage with the wider community and work with each other, share kind of the pains of going through this, but also our learnings and what we're doing. And this is really why we've put together this presentation today, is to really take that step into engaging with the wider Matrix community so we can work together and understand the sort of impacts this will have on us as an ecosystem, and obviously open source in general. So thank you so much for your time. I know that was quite a lot of information, but I'm very happy to talk about these things, maybe too much at length. If you want to reach out to me on Matrix, it is the same. My MXID is exactly the same as my email address that is there on the last slide. So feel free to reach me at any time. I don't know if there's any questions for now. I don't know how we're doing this remotely.
Are there any questions locally here in the room? Can't see any hands raising up. There is a chat, but it's kind of... The last messages were quite a long time ago, so I guess that's it. Oh, no, there's a hand finally raising up in the back of the room over here.
Thank you. Thanks. It was very great, the talk, and very impressive. I have a question. Why didn't you make this on the week or last yesterday when all the government people were still here? Today is Saturday and they're all gone, but this would have been very impactful for them.
Yeah, well, the goal for this one was really more to reach out the companies that are having to deal with it. All of the government people, they're really, I feel like it's kind of past them at the moment, because the impact that they could have right now would not be as significant, because the text is agreed and the text is final. So right now is really with the organizations to start preparing. And because it is at a commissional level, it made more sense to focus this as part of the element track. But if there are other consultations opening for next year, for example, it might make sense to look at things differently. But yeah, I believe that was the rationale for the scheduling.
If I can jump in terms of scheduling, there were a few things. Like it would have been, we considered it, putting it into the public sector track. Camera. But first it was tight. The public sector was pretty crammed. And the reason for putting it would be to help government understand they need to fund the open source, the software editors who are doing the thing. Also, we had a kind of public policy track shaping up, so that's why it ended up this day. But we considered it both ways. And as Dennis says, like the idea is very much to talk to the industry more than the public sector. Any other questions? Thanks, if I'm here and have a mic? Cool. Thank you, Dennis, for doing from remote. Do we have a state manager? No, okay. Well, next talk. Do I have to announce the next talk? The closing? Well,
thank you. I'll dip out. Thank you, everyone. Enjoy the rest of the conference. Bye.